Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. You know the voice. It's me, Ed Bensel. It's Friday. Congratulations, you made it to the end of another work week. I hope it went well for you. I see in Pennsylvania today my Pittsburgh Pirates have opening day at PNC Park, and it's snowing right now. I'm starting this show about 10 after 10 in the morning Eastern time on Friday. I think the game starts at 1 o'clock. And right now in Pittsburgh, it's like 30-some degrees and snowing. We'll see if they get that game in today. But it is a beautiful day here. It's just weird to me. Can I just say this? That you start baseball too early. As happy as I am that baseball season is here, but you should not be playing baseball in weather or at a time of year where it's the possibility of snow happening. If it were me, and I know the owners would never go along with this, I personally see no problem with the 162-game schedule. Maybe that's never going to, I mean, there's no schedule in any sport that's ever going to get any shorter. But it'd be nice if you started baseball mid-April and ended middle of September, and you just infused more doubleheaders in there somewhere to make up for some of these days, some of these games. It's all stretched out. You only have one game per day. Doubleheaders used to be a lot more common than they are now, and that would be a way to condense the schedule, maybe do it on the weekends, on Saturday and Sunday games, something like that, instead of what they do now. And in fact, putting more doubleheaders into the mix would probably give the players a couple more days off during the season, which I think you could do. Yes, I know the owners wouldn't like it, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it would probably cost them not a lot of less in revenue. And I think the fans would probably like it a little more. And then you wouldn't run into things where you're starting games at 30-some degrees and snowing, I think. And I think that would be good for everybody. Just an idea. In other news, my trivia team had its... we played last night every Thursday up at Fat Cat Tavern in Largo, Florida. And one of the players on my team talked about hearing gunfire. And when he came out of the complex, I think he lives in a house, but in the neighborhood where he lives, he was diverted one way instead of being able to turn the other way. And here there had been a shooting not far from where he lives. And the bizarre part is that where it happened is a place that I've eaten at before. It's a wing house. I think it's just a local franchise wing place in the Tampa area as far as I know. And it's like Buffalo Wild Wings, but just in the Tampa area. And that's where the shootout happened. And the shootout actually made national news. And it was a guy who was supposed to show up for court either on Wednesday or yesterday morning, and he didn't show up. Well, the police went looking for him. They tracked him down. He was in a car. It was a Uber car. Imagine that. So an Uber driver driving this guy who didn't show up for court around, the police track him down, and there's a shootout, and the guy got killed. I think that the Uber driver got away without any injuries. I'm not sure exactly how it all went down, but there was a shootout. The guy who's on my trivia team heard it happening. He said it sounded like firecrackers, but then he realized, I think that was probably gunfire. He said there were several shots, at least 15 shots, he said. And we didn't know what it was when we were talking about it yesterday evening at trivia. We didn't know what had happened, but now this morning I saw the story that, once again, this guy, the police were looking for him. He was supposed to go to court and didn't. Why he didn't want to go to court, why he thought he needed to shoot at the police over this or all this, I have no idea right at this second. But it's you don't run into somebody too often who said, yeah, I heard gunshots, and it appears on national news. But that happened. It happened in Largo, Florida. That place is about less than 5 minutes from where my brother and his wife live. For me, it takes me about 15 minutes to 20 minutes to get there. So if you saw that national news story of a shootout in Largo, Florida, a member of my trivia team actually heard it happen. Let's get to the show. Yeah, there's nothing going on politically today, is there? That's supposed to be sarcastic. Last night, Donald Trump ordered the United States military, primarily the Navy, to shoot missiles into Syria to attack this airbase that had been used as the launching point for this chemical attack that happened in Syria within the last week. I've been meaning to get to that story, just haven't been able to get to it. And I have to admit that I didn't know that the United States was going to be doing something in response. Maybe I should have put that more on the front burner. Had I suspected so, I would have done so. I would have said, talked a little bit more about this, but now I guess the horse is out of the barn and it's too late to shut the doors to talk about what was going, happen if the United States did do it. Now we have to talk about it from the standpoint that the United States did, actually did it. I have to say that I'm a little surprised. My buddy Dave and I had a conversation, just a short conversation about this last night. And my opinion is that we are diving headfirst into a briar patch regarding all of this. I had a conversation with my dad last night as I was driving home from trivia. And we talk about trivia. He always wants to know what some of the questions were. But we also got onto this topic. And I happen to believe that it's a mistake. I believe that the situation that has been going on in Syria for how many years now is much different than when George W. Bush decided to go into Iraq. To my knowledge, Assad, although he's no friend of the United States or anything like that, I don't know that Assad has plans to shoot at American planes or sink any American ships or anything like that or be behind terrorist attacks in the United States. Assad has a lot of problems that I don't know if he can think that far outside the box. I think that every day he just has to wonder if he's going to make it through it. It's much different than in Iraq, where Saddam Hussein continued to shoot at American planes even after September 11th. Was not going to assist the United States at what it to do in the Middle East, and probably was going to do everything in its power to stop that. Really, militarily, probably Saddam Hussein had a lot greater ability than what Syria has. To me, I see it as a totally different situation. I think that if Iraq, with Saddam Hussein as its leader, could have done something against American forces, it would have. I'm not so sure about that regarding Syria and Assad, even though I think he's a bad guy. This is a situation where this is a civil war, and now the United States has decided that it's going to pick a side in this. Now, I know, going back to the Barack Obama administration, that he had said the United States would get involved if chemical weapons were used. Well, they were used, and Barack Obama didn't do anything. I thought it was a mistake for him to make that comment in the first place. I don't think that you issue ultimatums like that. I have to admit, just the way I know chemical attacks are horrible. I know they're indiscriminate. I know that there's a lot of reasons to dislike them, but in the end, people are still dead. Does it really matter if it's nuclear weapons or chemical weapons or bullets or bombs or IEDs or anything else? I know that there's probably some Geneva Convention and agreements of war that chemical weapons aren't to be used, and that's all nice and well and good and so proper and kind and respectful and mature and everything else, but does it really matter? The people are just, they're still dead. If you don't want them to be dead, then you should intervene. You shouldn't intervene if a certain type of weapon is used. All weapons are meant to kill people. So that part of it, going back to Barack Obama's administration, and I should say Barack Obama isn't the first leader of a country who has made a statement like that. Well, you know, if you want to use all the bombs in the world, we're not going to stop you. But you start using that chemical stuff, then that's just too much for us. It just sounds so stupid to me. I got to tell you. I know that what chemical weapons do and the way they kill people is like torture. I get that. But if the issue is just people being dead, which I think it is in war, then it's all the same. Either you're going to put up with it or you aren't. And as we know, though, Barack Obama made that statement. And then when the Syrian government, led by Assad, used chemical weapons, the United States did nothing, which I think even makes it doubly bad. Now we have Donald Trump, who, remember, was against going into Iraq, allegedly, who now has us shooting cruise missiles into Syria simply because Syria used chemical weapons. To my knowledge, no Americans were killed in these chemical attacks. This is a civil war in Syria that the United States shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place. I look at what has gone on, what went on in Libya. I see what has gone on in Egypt. Those two countries are not better because of Gaddafi and Hosni Mubarak being gone. They're worse. Whereas you can say all you want about what happened in Iraq, whether we should have gone in or not. Iraq, as a danger to the rest of the world, is less now than it was back then. And it would even be better had we stuck there in there and not gotten out in 2011. Now, whether it was all worth all those lives of Americans who got killed in there, I don't know. But I still think that we should have gone in there, and that situation is totally different than this one. But now we have Donald Trump, who made fun of George W. Bush, made fun of all of these politicians who wanted to go into Iraq back then. And we're still, the jury still is out whether he really believed that or not. He's trying to play Monday morning quarterback. But now we're shooting missiles into Syria. I want to know where all of his supporters are. Now, I've seen some of them. Some of the kook alt-right people who say that this isn't why we supported him, this isn't why we elected him. And so I kind of suspect that. But I'm wondering what Laura Ingraham, I didn't see any comments from her. I'm wondering what she is saying now. Because she was a person who was for going into Iraq and then later changed her mind. She was a huge supporter of Donald Trump, and now he's firing missiles into Syria. Is this what you wanted, Laura Ingraham? Is this what you wanted, Ann Coulter? Is this what you wanted, Sean Hannity? Is this what you wanted, Rush Limbaugh? I see this. I realize that there is a thinking out there that if you're going to make a promise on something, you have to follow through. And that's what, even at redstate.com, they're saying, well, Donald Trump is falling through on the promise that Barack Obama made, who, you know, that he didn't keep. You know, you don't back up another wrong with another wrong. And I'm not sure that that's why Donald Trump has done this. I don't think that Donald Trump ordered these missiles fired in there because of a promise that Barack Obama made. I don't believe that for a second. Instead, I think that this was something that he decided he wanted to do. Somebody gave him that advice on doing that, and so he went through with it. And I think it's a mistake. I even have written in my notes here, and I hate to get conspiratorial like this. Is he doing this just to show that his administration isn't as close to the Russians as it's been made out to be? Because most of the world likes what we did in the last 24 hours. Whereas one country that didn't like it is, of course, Russia. And the United States, I guess Donald Trump, did let the Russians know what we were going to be doing shortly before we did it. And I'm reading that where these missiles were fired were on purpose, they were kept away from places where the Russian bases are. Still, Russia doesn't like that we did this. And so could it be, what's that movie, Wag the Dog? Was this an effort to show this? Because what has gone on here in the last 24 hours is certainly different than the way we thought that this was going to be handled regarding Donald Trump and his attitude toward foreign policy. And in fact, once again, I think that's the reason that a lot of these Trump supporters, these prominent Trump supporters who have been have been cultists since the beginning, saw this happen last night and say, no, this isn't what I voted for. This isn't why I supported him. You know, this is something that Hillary Clinton would have done. Maybe. And it should be known that it certainly seems that Donald Trump is getting more praise for what he's done from the moderates and liberals more than conservatives. And in fact, I was reading something last night when I found out that this happened. Went back to a statement that Ted Cruz made a few years ago about Assad in Syria and chemical weapons that said that we should just completely stay out of it. Now, I don't know if he's made a statement yet today regarding it. Rand Paul has made a statement a little late, in my opinion. Of course, we know that Rand Paul is much more suspicious of United States intervention than other senators are. I wouldn't necessarily call him an isolationist, but he's definitely more isolationist than I think most senators, and I think that he is more isolationist than most of the people in Congress, but he's not quite as isolationist as his father. And Rand Paul thinks that Donald Trump should have gotten approval and consented with the Congress before going about, you know, what happened last night. Well, it's a little late to bring that up now, Rand. As I started off this conversation, the horse is already out of the barn. It's too late to talk about closing the door. I would say that the Middle East is going to be worse because of this, not better. I'm not sure that Assad is going to look at this missile attack on this one base in particular, but blowing up a bunch of jets and things like that. Couldn't he just... So we're going to stand by while he continues to bomb these same people with conventional bombs? So is it that we... It's hard to understand at this point why we're doing this. Do we just not like chemical weapons? Is this a fight against chemical weapons? Or is this a fight against Assad? Is this a way to end the civil war? Is this a way to scare ISIS, who is in the area as well? I have no idea. I don't know what the end game is in this. I think that it's cross your fingers and hoping that Assad sees this and gets afraid. I have to say right at this second, I don't believe that's going to happen. I think that way because Assad is not alone. We all know the Russians are in there with him. The Russians, although I don't know if they had anything to do with this chemical attack, they surely knew that it was coming. They're in it with him. They like him. They like what he's doing. He has helped them out. They're helping him out. And are we thinking that a couple shooting 60 cruise missiles into Syria is going to say, make the Russians say, hey, wait, what are we doing here? Hey, maybe we are on the wrong side of this. Maybe we should get out of here. I don't think that's going to happen. I stand by my idea that we should have just stayed out of it and let it run its course. The time to do this, the time to fix this, was before Russia got involved in Syria. But Barack Obama, it seems, was too willing to let that country get involved in. They get Vladimir Putin involved there, and the Russians went back into the Middle East, someplace they haven't been since the Soviet Union collapsed. Remember, Egypt and some of these other countries used to be very, very close with the Russians, and that pretty much changed once the Soviet Union disbanded, and now Russia's back in there. Now, I could see that if the United States wanted to get Russia out of there, I don't know how you'd do that. I consider that to be a worthy goal, because I think the Russians, all they want to do is meddle. M-E-D-D-L-E. They just want to meddle in there. You don't know what their motivations are. It very well could be that they're using Assad for their own devices for somewhere down the road. You just don't know. That's why you'd want them out of there in the first place. But now that they're there, I don't think that you want to provoke them. I'm not saying if they do something wrong, you shouldn't confront them. But just shooting some cruise missiles into Syria because of a chemical attack seems pretty petty to me. And I don't know if that's going to intimidate anybody anywhere. What if they do it again? You're going to, what, 60 isn't enough? You're going to shoot 120 next time? I just don't know what the plan is. I don't know. Oh, there was another country that hated this missile attack too. Iran. They hated it as well. And so I guess on one hand you could say, well, hey, look, we shot these missiles in there and all the right people hate it. Of course, Syria hates it. The Russians hate it. Iran hates it. Must be good for the United States. Must be a win for the good guys. I don't look at it that way at all. Because the way I look at it is that if you don't like Iran, you confront Iran. What they're doing. If you don't like Russia, you confront them. If you don't like Syria, you have to figure out, and Assad, you have to first figure out why. We know why we don't like the Russians. Because they are a power. They have Vladimir Putin, who they have the ability to strike anywhere should they get aggressive, like they did in Crimea. Iran, we don't like them because they're trying to build nuclear weapons, and we know that if they build nuclear weapons, they're going to sell them on the black market, maybe to North Korea and to terrorists and whoever else. It's hard to figure out why we don't like Syria. I'm not saying we should be friends with them, but surely we have to dislike them for more reasons than just that there's a civil war going on there and Assad is killing his own people. Surely there has to be more of a reason than that. I know that there are Syrians that are getting it, you know, that are seeping, have left that country, fled that country, have gone into Europe and some of the problems that have been caused there. Well, that's not Assad's fault. The people are, yes, in a way it is. There's a civil war there. People are fleeing. But the problems that are being caused in Europe is because of Europeans accepting these people with open arms and just letting them in. And that shouldn't have been done. That's not Assad's fault that Europe accepted these Syrians so willingly. Is not Assad's fault. That's Europe's fault. So you can't put that on Assad. It's surely not enough of a reason to bomb him. I just think this is a huge mess. I mean, I've gone through this before, the whole Middle East, and this all happened. All of this happened because of the United States pulling out of Iraq in 2011. As a reminder, that is a place that Donald Trump doesn't think we should have been in the first place. You know, you got Saudi Arabia on one hand helping Iran, fighting with Iran to defeat ISIS. On the other hand, they're fighting each other over in Yemen. You have the United States and Iran and a bunch of other countries who want to control ISIS and defeat it. But of course, the United States and Iran are enemies for other reasons. You have Assad, who's no friend of ISIS either, but you're bombing him. Russia, they're no friend of ISIS, but you're provoking, you're throwing bombs, you're shooting cruise missiles into a friend of Russia's. And when you put it all together like that, it shows the state of the world and the problem with diplomacy in the world. That all these countries can't get together. They all have a common enemy, ISIS. They all have a common enemy, terrorism. I know that Iran helps terrorists, but not ISIS. They're more into Hezbollah, some of these other groups, but not ISIS. You'd think we'd all be able to get together, despite our differences, to destroy ISIS, take care of them, because ISIS is basically surrounded, and then sort our differences out afterwards. You'd think. It's just not the way it works, I guess. Maybe I'm just a little too naive. You go through all this, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Russia, Syria, the United States, the United Nations, NATO, European Union, everybody hates ISIS, and we can't get together to work against them. Instead, we have a civil war in Syria. We have Russia on Assad's side. The Turks don't seem to give a dang about it, any of it, as long as Russia doesn't fly over their country. We have the Kurds, who we're friends with, but the Turks don't like them. We have the Kurds, we're friends with them, but we're kind of friends with Iraq, but Iraq doesn't like the Kurds, and we're shooting missiles into Syria. Yeah, this is all going to end well. And I haven't even mentioned Israel regarding all of this. Israel supports our shooting of missiles into Syria. Which I don't know if I should be happy about that or not. I mean, Syria is what, on the northern border, just right there north of Israel. You'd think if the Israelis were really bothered by what was going on in Syria, they'd take care of it themselves. But they haven't. And they'd be more inclined, you know, that's what, I mean, given what I think I know about everything, if I were the president of the United States now, I'd be talking to Israel and saying, what do we want to do? We are allies. This is very close to your border. What do you think we should do about this? Do you want to do anything? We're more willing to help out. What do you think we should do? I don't think that we should lead it. We're more than willing to support you if you want to do something. That's the way I think I would have handled it, given that Israel is a lot closer to the situation, has more to lose from this than the United States does. But once again, that's not the way it went down. And my impression is that Donald Trump is a fan of Israel. In fact, when he says that, I think I actually believe him. I have to tell you, I don't think these cruise missiles are going to change anything. And I'm not even sure they should change anything. I'm not so sure that the rebels win. And I know we financed them at one time. We've given them guns at one time. Going back a couple years, the CIA was involved in the training of some of these rebels against Syria. That was all a mistake. We should just stay out of it. This is a local problem. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. I don't know what else I need to say about this cruise missile attack. You know me. I think that I hope this does not become a peeing contest between Donald Trump and the Russians and the Syrians and everybody else involved in this, because that's not what we need right now. I don't think that's what the Middle East needs right now. I don't think that's what the United States needs right now. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be concerned as a country about what is going on in Syria and everything, but I'm trying to take a more global view of this. And I just got to say, I just don't know what a civil war in Syria has anything to do with our national security. I really don't. Whereas I think that Saddam Hussein in the situation that he was in the early 2000s could have been a very serious problem for our national security. I don't believe that of Assad. I don't believe that. And if you feel the same way, then you have to start wondering, why are we shooting cruise missiles into there? I mean, surely shooting cruise missiles into Iran would make more sense. You know, it's one of these strange things, and this just shows you how messed up this all is that Iran can continue to try to make a nuclear weapon, and we're actually making deals with them with the prior administration, but would never think about shooting cruise missiles into there. Would never think about doing a surgical strike on their nuclear labs. But we'll fire cruise missiles in on a civil war. Now, do you think that we did that? Do you think that Syria is a bigger concern than Iran? No. Then why aren't we doing something about Iran? Why aren't we? Surely North Korea is a worse situation than what's going on, is more dangerous to the world than what's going on in Syria. So it feels to me like we shot missiles into Syria just because we're too afraid to do it elsewhere. That is poor foreign policy. It's just poor. If you think that the Iran is a danger to the United States, then that should be your concentration. And if you're brave enough to shoot missiles into some little country that, you know, doesn't have any worldwide influence, then doesn't it just make us look weak? That we can't confront our true enemies, but we can confront a country that's going through a civil war. I don't know. I think that this is kind of the way it looks. You know, here we are, the tough guy, and all we can do is beat up on this weakling. You know, that just beat up another weakling. So I don't like it. I think this is going to cause more problems than it's going to solve. But this is what you all voted for, I guess. Move on to something else. Speaking of terrorism, looks like there was a terrorist attack in Sweden today. Another vehicle was used. I guess this is becoming a major theme in the 21st century within the last, 5 years or something like that, where if terrorists can't build bombs and they can't get their hands on guns and they can't get their hands on planes or trains or submarines or ships, that they'll just go out and get a truck and drive it through a group of people, like happened in Nice, France. And looks like this happened at Sweden. It's some shopping center. This happened actually right before I went on the air. At least 3 killed, many injured, and there was some video that I saw of people running away from the scene. know that Sweden has been one of those countries that has really let in a lot of Muslims over the years, and probably a lot of people who are inclined to maybe do something like this. And so we'll just have to see who this person ends up being, person or person. It's going to be persons, because every time something happens, even if it's only one person in the truck, they end up rounding up like 10 of his friends. So just I don't know, once again, what you can do about people getting their hands on trucks and cars and driving them through people. If that's going to be the new standard, I don't know how you protect against something like that. I mean, we could do something about planes with not allowing guns on planes and metal detectors and profiling and no-fly lists and everything. Are we going to have no drive lists now? And, of course, the major issue is that cars and trucks are a lot easier to steal than planes, or a lot easier to take over than hijacking a plane like happened on September 11th. And I'm not saying that we necessarily just have to say this is the new normal. I think what it means is that we just can't take any of this stuff for granted. And this will probably be another situation in Sweden where the Swedish police knew about this guy and just didn't do anything, like we've run into in the United States, where these people were on, even though they might have been American citizens, they were on somebody's list. The FBI had checked them out at one time or another, did nothing, and then the person does end up committing a terrorist attack. In fact, you could say, and I wonder if this would be interesting, to find out that the reason some of these terrorist attacks in the United States happened by American citizens who were under watch from the FBI is because they knew they were eventually going to get picked up, and they wanted to do something before they got picked up. That actually the investigation into them was what spurred them on to commit this their terrorist act even more quickly or sooner than they plan to, I wonder. And I think this is why police forces in the United States and elsewhere are going to have to figure out, you know what, if you have somebody in your sights, it doesn't help to go talk to the person and let the person go. If you're going to talk to them, you just got to keep them in custody and see how things shake out. Because once these people find out that they're on a list somewhere, or they're being watched, and their emails may be being hacked by the United States government, whatever else, they're going to say, well, you know what? I better get this done before they really take me into custody. In fact, that's an interesting point. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit more. That I think very well maybe that's one of the things that we're learning. That if it's good enough to talk to these people, it's good enough to keep them in custody. I know a lot of civil rights lawyers are going to have problems with that. But what are you supposed to do? I mean, really, what are you supposed to do if these figure out that these attacks were brought on by the actual investigations that were taking place? That these people thought that, well, I got called in there and I went in and they talked to me and wanted to know if I'm some part of some terrorist group, and I'm told them I'm not, but now they let me go. But I know they're checking out all my words that I said, and they're going to figure out that I lied, so I got to go do something. If we believe that's what's happening in some of these cases, then you can't afford to let these people go. If it's good enough to question them and be suspicious of them, it's good enough to keep them detained for a little while you figure out if they're telling a truthful story or not. Not just asking them and then letting them go. Just a thought. But for all you people who are out there walking in groups, you go to the mall, you go into city centers and things like that, I'm going to tell you right now, you should all have your heads on swivels. You know, and the tough thing about a vehicle is that, you know, if you are concealed carry and you carry a gun like I do, I don't know if that's going to protect you that much, if a car hits you. So it's going to probably, you know, protect you if there's a guy in a mall like in Minnesota with that sword or samurai, whatever it was. But a person with a car, a terrorist with a car, that's something totally different. So keep your heads on swivels, people. It can happen anywhere. Just like this, like I started off the show, there was a shooting up in Largo. It had nothing to do with terrorism, I don't think. But you never know, seeing these people going up the wing house. Hey, we're just going to have some wings today. We're going to hang out after work or whatever. And then bullets start flying. Can happen anywhere. Let's move on to something else. Hillary did an interview. I know that she's done a few interviews since she lost the election, but this seems to be the biggest one so far. And she was talking about why she lost the election, and it sounds to me that she's still in quite a bit of denial. And so let's go through that. Why I think that I should state for the record before we get into this. Why did Hillary lose the election? It's still a very good question 5 months since or 6 months since the election happened. Or 5 months since the election happened. It's still a very good question. I know that on the surface it seems pretty easy to answer. And those may be the answers. But I don't think that we should take those answers for granted. We as conservatives or people who are Republicans, we want to believe that it was because Donald Trump had run such a good campaign. I think that that's proven to be false. She got 3 million more of the popular vote than he did. I wouldn't necessarily say that was a very good, granted, he won the places he needed to. But I wouldn't say that the way he went about it is a duplication of what you want to do in 2020, should he run for re-election. I think that's cutting it a little too close. So, was it her? Was it her campaign? Just so you know, she, in this interview, cites three different points. One was the James Comey letter shortly before the election. She believes that that hurt her chances of winning. Number two, the Russians and the amount of course, she doesn't come right out and say that she believes the Russians hacked the election as if they got into the voting machines or anything. I'm not sure if she believes that or not. I know a lot of her supporters believe that. But she talks about the Russians with all the disinformation in the election. It was hard for people to decide, you know, who was the better candidate. And it's obvious that the Russians wanted Donald Trump to win. And I'm not so sure of that. Today, now that Donald Trump shot those missiles into Syria, are the Russians happy Donald Trump won today? They may have been happy in November. Are they happy now? I don't know. And then Hillary did blame some of it on misogyny, which you might call sexism. Or I guess what she's saying is, you know what? There's just a bunch of white guys who just don't want to see a woman be president. She doesn't come right out and say that. But that's it. That's essentially what she's saying when she says misogyny. She seems to be in... I'm not saying that those things didn't have an effect. Probably the Comey letter probably did. The Russian disinformation, I'm not so sure about that. And I will, even as a guy, I can admit, yes, there are men who are sexist pigs who will not vote for a woman for president. That is a fact. I have no doubt about that. No doubt about that. But it's also why many conservatives have said over the years that if there is going to be a woman who is the first president, it's probably more likely to be a Republican a woman who becomes president and not a Democrat one. And see, this is something that we as conservatives don't publicize enough, is that it's Democrats who are actually the gender biased ones. It's actually Democrats who are the sexist pigs. If you're going to believe that, because if she's going to believe that there are a bunch of guys out there who just can't vote for a woman, well, guess what? A lot of Democrats who voted for Barack Obama, a man, in 2008 and 2012, changed over and voted for Donald Trump in 2016. So it's her people in her own party, men in her own party, that seem to have that sexist problem, that misogyny problem, not Republicans, not conservatives. So maybe she should think about that for a while. But of course, you know, in this interview that she did, she doesn't talk anything. I mean, to this day, she completely dismisses that she did anything wrong with her email server or the Clinton Foundation or any of that. And I mean, we just went through about six different issues in the course of 5 minutes regarding Hillary Clinton. And it's hard to assign a percentage to each of them as to how they might have affected her not winning. Did James Comey affect her campaign 20%, 25%, 30%? Who knows? The Clinton Foundation issues, 10%, 5%? I don't know how you break it all down. And I'm sure that if you went to Republican voter after Republican voter, all these people who voted for Donald Trump and didn't want Hillary to win, they would break it down. Each one of them would have a different idea. Each of them would maybe pick out a different reason that Hillary Clinton didn't win. So I don't know how you go about assigning the number one point as to why she didn't win. I think overall, I just don't think that she's a likable person. I think that that is something you can talk about all of this stuff, from the Russians to James Comey to men being sexist, to the emails, to the Clinton Foundation, and everything else. Something that she has never, and relatively, all of those scandals are relatively new. And we know that the Clintons have been doing scandals for decades. But, so, the scandals change, but she doesn't. It was Whitewater and the travel office and all of that back in the 1990s. And then more recently, of course, there was Benghazi and all of that. I think in the end, I just don't think she's a likable person. As much as we talk about policy and we're a bunch of policy wonks and on this show, we talk policy and political issues and all of that. I think a major part of this is that she just does not come across as a likable person. And it's not that necessarily she's shady. She is. It's not that she's a liar. She is. It's not that she's gotten rich off of government and used her position. She has. But you know what? There are a lot of politicians who continue to get elected even though they do that stuff. Look at Robert Byrd and how he ruled West Virginia for all those decades. There's Robert Byrd Highway, Robert Byrd Bridge, Robert Byrd Building, on and on and on in that state of West Virginia. But I think the difference is that there was something about Robert Byrd that people liked, even though he used to be in the Ku Klux Klan and all of that. There isn't a lot to like about Hillary Clinton. And that is something that she has never been able to shake. There has never been an amount of publicity or PR work or her going out there and doing interviews that has ever been able to rid people's idea that she just, you just think if you got to know her that you just wouldn't like her. And the only people who do like her are two different kinds of people. People who need something from her, or people who don't know her at all and just go vote Democrat every time. And I think that's the reason she didn't get enough votes in some of these states to win. Because the only people who voted for her are the people who thought they were going to get something for her, and those people who just vote Democrat anyway. The people that she didn't pick up and or that she lost were those people who just thought, you know what, she's just not a good person enough to vote for. And these may have been Democrats. And so when you think about all those people who switched over from Barack Obama then to Donald Trump, it may be for that reason. It's not necessarily that they're sexist. It just happened to be that this time the person who was running on the Democrat side is not a likable person. Simply as that. And that was enough. And I think I talked about this, what was it, 3 weeks ago? They did something in New York City where they switched the genders of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and they recreated one of the debates and had a bunch of liberals in there watching it. And these people still came out of it liking the Donald Trump character, who was played by a woman, more than the male Hillary Clinton character. That's significant. That is something. You can't dismiss it. And it's obviously something about her. Now, is she a bad person? I have no idea. I should say, is she an immoral person? Yes, she is. But you can be immoral and be likable. Just look at all of these mafia guys over the years who are completely immoral, but a lot of people love them. And she's just not likable. And I don't know if she even realizes that. I don't know if she has somebody who has known her for decades, somebody that, you know, knows her, who can just pull Hillary to the side and say, you know, Hillary, I know you're like 70 years old and everything, but maybe the reason you lost this election is you're just not likable. People think you're a phony. And in a contest between a fake phony and a guy like Donald Trump, who is like the total opposite, he's actually probably a little too real, a little too frank, a little too bold, a little too brash, people are going to pick the Donald Trump character more than you'd think. Even though I know that you got 3 million more of the popular vote than he did. But I'm sure if somebody said that to Hillary Clinton, that person would be out of the Clinton circle very quickly. And I remember talking about this a while ago, probably when the email stuff started coming out. Is it okay if Hillary Clinton, if she's going to run for president, we didn't know at the time, if she loses the election simply because she's not likable, or do you want her to pay for Benghazi? Do you want to pay her for the Clinton Foundation? Do you want to pay for the email server stuff? Do you want her to pay for whatever other scandals and wrong things she does? Will it be enough if she never pays for any of that and she simply doesn't get elected just because she's not likable? And because I was telling you going way back that there was no way that she was ever going to spend time in jail for any of the things that she did. So is it good enough that she just loses this election because she's unlikable? And I think the jury is still out on that. I think that the main decider on that is going to be how the Donald Trump's administration goes. And it's not exactly off to a roaring start. I think that maybe eventually some people are going to want Hillary in jail just to make them feel better about their Donald Trump vote, which is going south quickly. Just a thought. But I got to go. You can go to edwarddensel.com. You can find the show at Podomatic and iTunes. Subscribe and review the show if you would. You can find the show on Twitter, USA Podcast. I have a new episode of my other show, Unfound, the Missing Persons Program, coming out today, later today. And you can find that show on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. Please listen, subscribe, and review at Podomatic and iTunes. Hope you all have a beautiful weekend. Keep listening to America's Conservative Podcast.